Well, every year we see some new technologies and advances in technology as well. And we're going to talk about some of those today and also take a look at computer issues or questions that you might have as we visit with Jesse LeGru. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. You might not recognize my voice. I have a little bit of a cold, but Jesse is with us. He's fine, and he is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin's Division of Information Technology, and around here we call it DOIT. He focuses on desktop and laptop security problems, and he'll be talking about new tech gadgets, answer your computer questions as well, so I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Jesse, great to have you back. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
What kind of a year do you think 2017 will be tech-wise?
I think overall we've been seeing a lot of changes over the years, but I think we're just going to see a lot of small incremental changes to products. But I think that something's coming up a lot more, and I think we've been waiting for several years for this to become a lot more popular, is virtual reality.
Yeah.
And kind of the expansion of augmented reality. So, for example, like the Pokemon Go, which I actually haven't heard too much about in the last few weeks or even the last month, but I think some of those are going to be coming out a little bit more and becoming more available to people as time moves on.
Well, you know, if you watch an ad on television for those virtual reality, you know, it's very, very enticing. I haven't tried one yet. I haven't looked through one, so I don't know what they're like. But
yeah, and it's something I've been meaning to try. So, and this is, I think, the one thing that we're definitely going to see is, you know, when you look at virtual reality, you know, what's the cost to get into using something like that?
Yeah.
Something I've been waiting for a long time is the Oculus Rift, because, you know, they had a lot of buzz around it and, you know, how it was going to be used. And, you know, there's a multitude of accessories. They also have it now for gaming systems that are coming out more. But one thing that I saw that Google did with a lot of the Android devices is for a very low cost and even free or minimally paid apps, you can get even just, it's basically cardboard that fits over your face. You fit your phone into it, and you can experience at least a limited virtual reality from that. So you don't have to buy this expensive headset that might be $300, $1,000, and then potentially have a powerful computer to run it or something else. You can take something you already have and
use it.
Right.
Oh, well, that would be all right. I wouldn't mind that, because I've got to believe there's a fairly high profit margin in those right now, but...
Well, one thing, I think the Oculus Rift either is finally coming out. I think they've been talking for a year or two that, you know, we're going to have this product and be released. They've only had development versions, but I think there's actually products coming out, but they're still not very cost-effective for just the average person. But people who do use gaming systems, for example, a PS4 or PlayStation 4 actually does have... add-ons where you can actually have a virtual reality experience with some of the games, but even then it not only depends on, you know, the gaming system you have, the hardware that you have for that virtual reality experience, but also the development of the games. So, for example, you know, you can have all these pieces in place, but if you don't have the content, it doesn't really help to utilize.
Jesse LeGru, our guest today. If you have a computer question or maybe a new technology question, I hope you'll join in. Number 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Well, the cell phones, I think Apple's celebrating its 10th anniversary of the iPhone this year.
Correct.
Any rumors about what they're going to do to celebrate?
As far as celebration, everything I even tried to take a look at was really, well, we're going to have a new iPhone. So I think a lot of people disappointed in the latest release for a variety of reasons, whether it was just not many changes to the phone itself, whether it was the headphone jack went away. So I think there are just mixed feelings. With the new iPhone, there's a lot of buzz around it and a potential new device that could be sleeker, a more drastic change than we've seen from the iPhone in probably quite some time. They're even talking of, you know, kind of, you know, a full kind of glass type phone. What that means, I have no idea. There's a lot of buzz around it, but what we're going to see is uncertain, but most likely, I think they were talking about potentially in the middle of 2017, we might see this new iPhone release that will actually be a more drastic change than we have seen recently.
No. I saw, and it wasn't the iPhone, but another phone where they were working on sort of a folding system that's more like your wallet as opposed to a hinged kind of system.
Yeah, and it was, a Samsung-designed phone potentially, and I think this is... We've seen a lot of sci-fi movies. We really haven't seen anything like in real life, but where you can have kind of a bendable glass and experience. And I remember a few different movies where, it would be this canister and you pull from left to right and you get this kind of translucent screen that you can actually interact with. And this obviously wouldn't be that fancy, but it would be something that would allow you to actually move and bend the screen and potentially the entire phone. There's not a lot of details about what that looks like, but it is a possibility we might see sometime this year.
Tablets, anything new there?
There's, at least from what I was reviewing, there wasn't a whole lot of changes. I think there were new Surface Book, the Microsoft tablets being released. There were some minor improvements and new iPads coming out, and I think some stylus updates, but nothing that really seemed... like a large change. It's just the kind of normal upgrades we're used to seeing. It's going to be a little bit faster, maybe a little bit smaller, but otherwise not a huge change in the market from what I saw.
I haven't purchased one of the watches, the smart watches, mostly because most of the things that the smartwatch has, I've got in my iPhone 6S.
Yep.
So it's all there. So... is that a passing fad or is it?
I think it's going to become more popular as more features come out. I think one of the biggest barriers that people had towards using the watches was that it did require a different device kind of be tethered to it. So you can use your watch and you can use it for jogging and getting metrics for your workout, but you need to have your phone close to it so you can collect some data, so you can get GPS information. And as time's moving on, those are being split and you don't need to have that device. And people are using it for text messaging and a few other items. And I think it's getting, the market's getting more mature, and there's a lot more groups invested, not just Apple, not just Google, which Google's supposed to have a couple new watches potentially coming out this year that actually could be large changes in the market.
Oh.
But there are changes, and I think they're going to become much more useful. I see a lot of them really being used by people who are into kind of tracking their habits, into tracking... their exercise routines and kind of the goals they have set for that. I've known a lot of other people who use it for email and everything else. I kind of go back and forth. Is that useful or not? Are you too connected versus you should disconnect more?
I just reach and grab my phone, which is much bigger if I'm going to email.
Yep. So, yeah, it kind of depends what you're looking for. I think a lot of people do like it, but even the new Google phones and Google watches that are coming out and even some of the previous, they have Nest now, which you can control your thermostat. You can also do that from your watch.
Yeah.
So as you get more applications that are available, that's also kind of the biggest gap is what applications are available to actually use on your watch versus it just being a watch and tracking your pulse or tracking how much you move. they're becoming more useful over time. So I think it's not, it feels like some people like it might be a fad right now, but I think over the next few years as it matures, there's going to be a lot more use to it.
Lots of people have it, yeah. Well, lots already have those, I guess. There's been pretty good sellers.
Yep.
Paul in Proctor, Minnesota. Thanks for calling, Paul. What's on your mind?
So I have a couple-year-old laptop that runs Windows 8, which I hate. And Windows 10 is out, but I've also heard stories that you have to release tons of personal information for it to work. I'm a computer user who's comfortable with the old style Windows, and it's not a touch screen, so 8 is functionality is much less productive in my mind. What's with moving to 10? What are the gains? What are the advantages? And does that system look more like a traditional Windows versus the tablet style?
So for the Windows 10, if you do move to Windows 10, it does look a little bit more traditional, like Windows 7, for example. They do bring the start menu back. It's not the exact same menu or interface by default that you have, but it does take away that Metro interface that Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 had. So it is going to look a little bit more traditional in that sense. As far as the personal data. Normally when upgrading or installing Windows 10, it has a lot of different screens and asks you some questions. All of those, or maybe 90% of them, are actually privacy related. So you can actually turn off individually all those features. And even if you don't have those options straight ahead, you can actually go into the system preferences and turn off the data collection features that they have, whether it's for troubleshooting or trying to, you know, learn your experience so it can deliver you content. So you can always disable those after the fact. I've used Windows 7, 8, 10. Windows 10 is much more like Windows 7, just because you do get that start menu. You don't have that Metro interface that it really is geared towards mobile devices and tablets that you're actually interacting with, you know, your hands or your fingers. So I think you're probably going to be happier with the interface for Windows 10. As far as any of the other changes, I think they're minimal when you interact with your day-to-day applications like Word, Firefox, or other applications.
And the other question is, usually when you upgrade on an operating system, they use more memory. Is Windows 10 more of a memory storage hog than previous versions, or is it about the same?
At least from my experience, it's been about the same. I haven't seen a lot of overhead as far as, you know, taking up much more memory. Especially if you have a computer that you have from the last 2 years, my guess is you're going to have at least 8 gigabytes of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fine for Windows 10. And it really depends on, after that, you know, what applications are you running? Are they more memory intensive? But I don't think you're going to see a big change from going from 8 to 10 and seeing it, you know, suck a lot more resources and slow your computer down.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Have a question about your computer or your software or maybe about the new products that are coming out? I hope you'll join us. Again, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chasseau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn hosts her first All Things Political show for 2017. That's at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Right now, talking today with Jesse LeGrew, technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin Division of Information Technology, talking computers with him, some of the new things that are coming out, and, of course, all those computers you have right at home. I hope you'll join in with your software computer question. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And let's see, we've got Fran in Columbus up. So let's go right to Fran. Hi, Fran. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you. I have Windows 10, and I use an internet service provider that meters my service. Windows 10 seems to be downloading much more, and all of the time my usage has gone up tremendously. And I'm told that there really isn't any way to effectively monitor when Windows is downloading. Is it possible to change that so I can download it when I'm somewhere where I don't have a metered service?
And for the metered internet connections, if you do have, you know, lower bandwidth, there is something that you can do. Whether you're using wireless or physically plugged into your network at home, you can set it up as what they call, and it's actually the same terminology, Windows terms it as, you can set a metered connection. What that does is it Disables a lot of the built-in Windows features from automatically downloading or uploading content, which includes Windows updates. It might include other features within Windows that, you know, delivers content that might be relevant to you. You can actually set this up. It's under the control panel and in settings. And depending if you're using Wi-Fi or a physical network connection.
I've got a hotspot.
Okay. It'll show up as most likely Wi-Fi, I think, probably on your computer.
Okay.
You can specify that it is a metered connection, and you can probably even search within Windows just for metered connection. It should bring up the control panel portion for you right away. And
I think my husband did that, but we're still having trouble with a lot of downloads. Is it something that once it downloads updates, I'm going to have to go back in and reset that it's a metered connection?
It depends how the computer kind of recognizes your connection at home. Usually it's going to recognize that network connection the same time every single instance it connects, because it's going to have the same network name and it's going to have the same password. So it should remember that setting, and you shouldn't have to reset it. One way to check is with that metered connection setting, I would just keep track of whether it's on or off. If you do notice that your internet connection usage is still high, the metered connection is turned on, which means it should disable all of those features. Assuming it's all working correctly and not downloading any of the Microsoft-related content, it's a possibility that there might be a separate application that's actually on your computer that is uploading and downloading information. And the Windows metered connection feature can control a lot of the main Windows components, but it may not be able to control the network usage from anything else installed on your computer. So, for example, if you're using Dropbox or any other kind of shared content application, it may not affect those, and those may still be using your internet connection. If it is beyond Windows, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to find out what is using your internet. And you have Windows 10, correct?
Yes, and it started when we installed Windows 10. The only thing I have that I've added is Office.
Okay, and for Office or updates, that should be controlled really by that metered connection feature. One thing I would take a look at, and I've actually used this in the past, it actually does work really well. They have a resource manager. It's part of Windows 10. It actually is very full-featured and easy to use. The resource manager can show you your network utilization and, you know, what you're uploading and downloading, but it can also tell you this by application, meaning that you can actually find out, if you keep that window open, what applications are actually using what bandwidth over what period of time.
Where do you find that?
I have looked at that, but maybe I need to pay more attention to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you take a look, some of the built-in Windows components might look confusing just because they might have they look seemingly like random names because they're kind of Windows processes and might have not friendly names. But it's something I've used, and at least from what I've used it in the past, it's worked really, really well. So I'd recommend taking a look there just to see if you do notice that it is Windows doing those downloads and uploads or what process is doing it. But that metered connection should resolve it when you're at home. If you do go out, it will reconnect to whatever network you're on. It will look at that network as a new network, and I believe that metered connection would be disabled. When you come home, it should be enabled again, but I would just check to make sure that that feature is turned on when you get home.
Okay.
And kind of keep track of that. It really should remember that. That's why it, you know, when you go from place to place, it really does recognize the network that you're using. But I would just double check, because if it does turn out that that metered connection feature is turned off, you may have your answer right there.
Okay, I will check to make sure that that's on all the time then.
All right, Fran.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Where do you find it? Fran knows where it is, but where do you find that particular...
The resource manager?
Yeah.
There's a few different ways to find it. Normally, I go to the Task Manager, which you can find within Windows. But the Resource Manager, you can find even in the Control Panel and search in the Control Panel. And I think it's under the Administrative Tools.
Jan in Viroqua up next. Hi, Jan. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah. How are you?
I use Windows 7.
Yeah.
And I really dislike the visual interface for the home page on Windows 10. Windows 7 can do everything I want it to do. How long am I going to be able to keep using it?
So for Windows 7, and I'm actually going to take a look, so just like any version of Windows or Office, they have basically a maintenance or support period, and I believe for Windows 7, you've got some time. Just let me verify this. I think you've got at least a couple years. But I will verify. So Windows 7 mainstream support is 2015, but extended support is 2020. So you should be okay for at least another. Three years. And by that point, they'll probably have a lot of other updates for Windows, including Windows 11, maybe Windows 12. We'll see.
All right.
And we, who knows, we'll may be lucky. They may revert to a more modified format.
Yeah, never know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Jan. Nancy in Port Washington, hello to you.
Good morning. I have an Android phone right now. I am hearing impaired, and I have been told, because I have hearing aids, that the iPhone is more compatible, that the company is working more with people that have hearing problems, using the Bluetooth, etc., that goes straight to the hearing aids. Do you know anything about this?
I haven't done a lot of research into it, but the iPhone does have different accessibility applications and also some of the software is actually built for hearing aids. I think there's probably a little bit more research that I would even need to do to just verify kind of what the compatibility is for specific devices, but it does have a lot of those features built into the device. And actually on Apple's website, they actually have a section devoted to hearing impairedness and TTY.
Okay.
And you could probably just find it right on the Google on Apple's website, but it's apple.com/accessibility/iPhone/hearing. So they have visual and auditory alerts, a lot of different options for FaceTime. So it is something they're very conscious of, but it's not something that I've had a lot of experience with myself. But they are trying to gear a lot of the usage also towards hearing impaired and having the capability to use the phone as much as possible.
I have had an Android for a few years, and I had purchased a new one last year, and it is more difficult to hear with that than the previous one. It only goes up to a certain level, and that is all it does.
You certainly would want to look into the iPhone.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Ben in Madison, it's your turn now. Ben, hello.
Good morning. I guess it's still morning. I have a different type of question, or hopefully you can help me with. I manage a computer room and library room for a senior housing program here in Madison. And when I took over, no one gave me the username or password of the 4 systems that we have. So I've been having a hard time trying to make any changes of any nature. Is there some program that I can either look into? The city will not provide any funding for what we're doing. A lot of it comes out of my own pocket.
Yeah.
Or is there an agency or somebody that I might be able to tap into that might be willing to come and look at them and allow the changes or delete whatever is there so that we can then have the administrative functional in the systems?
Yeah.
There are a few different ways to do this, and a lot of the options out there, people have made software applications to basically break into these computers. So resetting username accounts, whether they're administrative or non-administrative accounts. What operating system are these 4 computers running?
They're all Dell computers, and they, I think, I'll be honest with you, I'm not that familiar with the systems. I think it's 7, and I think a couple of them, I think they're all Windows 7 or XP, a combination of both or both in the systems themselves. There's old computers. They're not new ones. They're old ones, because I've been in it now 4 years, and they were there when I took over the library and computer room. So it's not easy for me to try to find something, even though I know something about computers, but not enough to try to tackle this kind of a problem.
Okay, and a lot of the tools that are out there, they are there are guides to using them. However, it might be a little bit difficult if you're not used to, you know, really working, not necessarily in the guts of the computer on a day-to-day basis. But there are free applications that you can actually burn to CD, or you can put on a flash drive, that you can boot the computer up to and guide through a series of steps into either clearing the administrator password so you can log in, or setting a new password so you can use that password to log in. But you'd have to use one of these different types of tools in order to do it. And there's a large group of applications out there that will actually allow you to do this, but do require a little bit more work. One option is actually built into Windows, in which you can use, I don't know if you've ever used safe mode on a computer before.
No, I haven't.
And part of this is kind of built into the Windows system recovery features, but you can actually run a command that will allow you to basically clear the administrative password, log into the system, and then reset it. And they do have step-by-step instructions on how to do it, but it might require a little bit more knowledge on how to boot it up into safe mode. You can find guides out there. It can be completely free. It would require some time investment in order to basically go through the process and test it.
But getting into safe mode isn't too difficult.
Yeah, getting into safe mode is normally right before you see the nice Windows boot up screen. You basically hit the F8 key, and I normally hit it multiple times because it's kind of a timing issue. Then it just gives you a menu. Would you like to boot in the safe mode? Would you like to boot in repair mode? That's really the first step, and a lot of these guides that are out there will actually go through step by step on what to type in, what to do, and it should allow you to get back into the system with administrative rights.
Okay, thank you. I'll give it a whirl, and hopefully I can work something out. Thank
you.
Yeah,
thanks a lot for calling, Ben. Good for you for the work you're doing. Dave in Land O'Lakes, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Happy New Year.
To you as well.
I just wanted to respond to that lady who called about the hearing aids to her iPhone. I've got that set up. I've had it for about a year and a half now, a couple of years, and I just absolutely love it. It just works fabulous. It's a company called ReSound is the purveyor of the hearing aids. It, as she described, it goes straight Bluetooth straight to your hearing aids, which means I can hear things incredibly well that I couldn't. I was always have trouble on the phone. And with those hearing aids, it works great. It just goes straight to your hearing aids. The one downside is that when you're talking on the phone, you could have your phone in the pocket, and people think you're just an addled guy talking to yourself on the phone.
There you go. Well, thanks, Dave. It's good to know that it's worked well for you and probably for a lot of other people.
My recommendation has sent a lot of people that way.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
You bet.
Appreciate it. And you can join in, too. Number to call, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, from the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. And we've got a couple open lines to get you on pretty quickly. Helen in Little Chute, it's your turn. Hi, Helen.
Oh, good morning. I have a question. Over the holidays, I've had Windows 10 six or 7 months. Over the holidays, I was sending out Christmas e-cards, and my computer crashed. And then when I rebooted it, it said, we can't sign you into your account. And I've never had that before. So then it came, the next prompt said, you've been signed in with a temporary profile. You can't access your files anymore. And so I haven't been able to access any of my files for the last week. Any ideas?
So in this, this issue is actually not one specific to Windows 10. I've had this happen on a variety of Windows operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
So for whatever reason, you know, all your files and data and settings are stored
my
in one spot.
Family pictures, yeah.
And it's all stored in one spot. And for whatever reason, Windows is not pairing your actual user account with, you know, where that data is, and it's not allowing you to access it. If you did need to access it, so first I'm just going to go into a workaround so you can access your files.
Oh, good.
When you do log in with what they call a temporary profile or temporary account,
right.
You should still have, you know, full rights to the computer.
Right.
I would open up My Computer or Windows Explorer. You can go to the C drive and go to the users folder. You are going to see a folder with your username on it.
Okay.
You'll be able to navigate through that. You're going to be able to go to the My Documents folder, to the desktop, and actually access the data, even though it's not within your normal profile.
Uh-huh.
So you'll be able to get to the data. Now, the second part is how to fix that temporary profile.
Right.
That is a little bit more tricky, since it usually requires to do some work, what we call in the registry, which is a place that stores a lot of information. And if you're used to it, it can be very useful. But if the wrong thing's done, it can, you know, it can break things, basically. So the steps in order to actually resolve it are usually straightforward. I've done this many times, and I've used the registry to do it. I'd recommend, if you do know anyone even a little bit computer savvy that is used to working with the registry at all, to have them take a look. There are steps online in how to resolve it.
Okay.
And it's easily just follow the instructions, resolve the issue, restart your computer, and everything works.
How common is this problem?
Since I've had it happen more than a few times to myself, it's pretty common. I think it's not something that happens 10% of the time. I think it's a very small amount. But I have had it happen many different times before, and there's a lot of reasons they can happen. But it does happen every now and again. Most times, you're never going to have that issue. So my guess is if you had it this one time, you may never have it again, even with any other computer after this. But it can be a sticky issue.
Oh, excellent. I appreciate that. I had one other quick question, if you have time.
All right.
Okay, the last question I had was in regard to a prepaid smartphone. Because it's prepaid, it only comes with 8 gigabytes of memory. And what I'm finding is 3/4 of the memory is taken up by these preloaded apps, which I don't even use and don't want. And I've tried to go in and remove these preloaded apps, and they won't let you. Is there any way I can remove these preloaded apps, some of them, so that I can, you know, have a little more memory?
It's possible. Do you know what kind of phone you have?
It's a Samsung.
All right.
So, I think it's a J3. It came out about a year ago.
Okay.
So, and I've haven't used a prepaid phone, so I'm not sure what kind of limitations I actually have in the software that don't allow you to delete apps.
Mm-hmm.
One item that might be useful if you can't delete the apps directly from the phone would actually, there are some applications. This is kind of a catch-22 a little bit because you need some space to potentially do this. There are a lot of applications that you can get from the Play Store from Google that are actually designed to allow you to remove applications, including even the ones potentially built into the phone. One thing that I'd be just leery of is, you know, I don't know if you delete any of these applications, are they going to do something to the phone that's going to make it unusable? That I'm not sure of.
Yeah, and I'm very careful about that sort of thing.
Boy, I'd be tempted to send a note to the email the provider and ask them.
Okay.
And one One other recommendation that I have is if I'm looking up the right thing, so the Galaxy J3V, it does have a micro SD card slot, which
right.
means you can buy a memory card. And they're actually, I mean, the price is dropping on those all the time.
Uh-huh.
For $5 or $10, you might be able to get uh-huh. another 8 to 16 gigabytes.
That would be great if I could expand that way. Because I'm on a limited budget, so this would be great.
Well, for $5 or $10.
I will do that.
Yeah, definitely take it to a store that sells memory cards and that also has, you know, people who are familiar with cell phones.
Uh-huh.
Easy upgrade, should be relatively inexpensive, and you could even have a lot more memory than even that's built into the phone. So I think
that sounds fantastic. And your program is fabulous, by the way.
Oh.
And I'm hoping Larry's feeling better. And tell him to drink lots of fresh lemonade, heat it in the microwave as hot as he can drink it. That will really help all day long.
Helen, thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Oh, yeah, that sounds good to me, actually, right about now. Janice in Cedarburg, it's your turn. Hi, Janice.
Hello. Very good program. I'm on AOL, and every once in a while, like maybe every other week or every other day, I'm forced to have a new password, and then I have to go through all sorts of nonsense to get there. And then I think the reason is that they want me to subscribe to a service, and supposedly you don't have any problems with antivirus or anything else. Do other programs have that type of thing too, or is this just AOL?
It's not just AOL, at least with the password resets. What you are seeing every few days is a little much. Most companies for password resets, they might do it maybe every year. For most of the consumer items that I see, I think even every year might be a little bit much. It just depends on where you're going to. Every few days seems extremely aggressive, which makes me wonder if there's a setting that can be changed even for your account that would enable you to change it less frequently.
I can't believe there must be a setting you could change. I can't believe AOL would make you do that.
Would you recommend, we're thinking about going to Outlook or Gmail or something, would you recommend one of those instead?
It really depends on, so even when changing email accounts, there's a lot of concerns. The main one is you're going to have a new email address. So it really is how easy you are going to be able to publicize that to everyone who you communicate with regularly so they know how to get in touch with you.
Yeah.
Usually that's just a matter of time, and that works itself out, and people are going to know how to contact you. I use Gmail. It works well. If you use other Google products, it might open other opportunities if you're interested with some of the other features that they have with their products. I haven't used AOL in quite some time, but do like Gmail for day-to-day personal email use.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you I know you
could set up your Gmail account, couldn't you? And then before you get rid of your AOL account, couldn't you just email everybody and say, here's my, I'm going to this today, here's my new account.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Would you recommend Gmail? Or my son said I should go to Outlook, but I don't know which is preferable.
I don't know. I use Outlook. And
I could probably go either way.
Yeah.
You can honestly, if you wanted to try it out, both accounts are free. You could always just see how the usability works for you, if it makes sense with the interface. And if you decide not to use it, you just stop using it. But both are free. I've used both. I actually do use both. And I don't know if I really have a preference either way. It depends. They have a lot of other applications that are built into it. You may or may not use them, but that could change your mind as well.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Jesse LeGru, our guest today from the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGru. And one open line at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Joe in Wisconsin Rapids next. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. I've got a real problem. I just kind of put it on the side, but I've got a folder, F-O-L-D-E-R. I got a folder that I cannot delete. It's a folder that used to be in one of the other files I had, whatever. But anyhow, I can move it. I cannot rename it. And I can't delete it. When I try to delete it, it tells me I can't find it. So I just kind of stick it off to the side and forget about it. But it has drove me nuts. I've been through the registry. I've searched the registry. I can't find a link to that folder.
And you can't just drag it down to the trash? And
I can drag it to the trash, and it won't. I can drag it there, and it'll say can't find it. And the funny part about this is that I have another computer that I use also, and what I did with that one is I actually made a mirror of the data that was on the one computer to the other one. I used a program to do that. It copies everything, but it did not copy that folder. So the newer computer, they're both Windows 8.1, but the newer computer doesn't have that folder on there. So it couldn't find it with that copy program in order to do it. So it just didn't do it. But the computer that I use all the time, I can't get rid of that stupid thing. I've had it to PC repair places and everything else. And other than the fact that I would think that if I did a total restore, it probably would go away, but I don't want to do that because I've got a ton of stuff on that computer. Even though it's all backed up, I don't want to start from scratch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You know? And the last time I started from scratch, it took me 13 hours to reload everything.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to do that. But I don't know where to look to any place else to get rid of that stupid folder.
Well, let's see what Jesse's got to say.
Okay. Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons why. Basically, Windows just doesn't like this folder for some reason.
Right.
A lot of the reasons can be due to the naming of the folder, how many different characters are in the folder, or even what's in that folder itself. One thing I would try would be to, and I think you've talked about it before, because you've tried to rename the folder, correct?
Correct. It wouldn't let me do that, and the folder is empty. I was able to delete everything that was in the folder, but I couldn't delete the folder.
Okay. And for when you're looking on Windows Explorer, they have options to view hidden system files and folders. Do you know if you have that option turned on?
That's turned on all the time, yeah.
Okay. One other thing that you can do, and I don't know how often you've used the Windows command prompt at all.
I can use the command prompt. I've got access to it. I haven't used it a lot.
Okay.
What I would do is I would take a look within the Windows command prompt, open that up, navigate to, and there's actually, I even just found a YouTube video that may help. It may not, because every computer issue is different, and kind of end up trying a lot of different things. But this kind of goes to the back old days of Windows, in which you had only 8 characters. So this is a way you might be able to fool your computer into deleting it, basically, in which you can try to find that 8-character label for the folder, delete it with a specific command in Windows, which they have. It's actually called RMDIR, which is short for remove directory, and actually uses a few specific switches to actually delete it. You can actually find it from, it's just called item not found error, how to delete undeletable file. It may work in your case. I have used this before. I've actually had the same issues a lot of times. Most of mine were the folder name or files within that folder were just too long. They had unusual characters that at least an English version of Windows didn't understand, or something was just in use. In your case, I'm not sure what the actual cause is. It definitely is an operating system glitch or snafu in this case. But I would actually take a look at that. So it's using the dir/x command to just get that 8-character name, and then using the rmdir command to delete the folder. And I'm hoping that works for you. Otherwise, what I've done is I've moved it to the root of the C drive, try to rename it to the least amount of characters as possible, and try to delete it. I don't think it's a file system permission issue because it's saying it's not found, not that right. you don't have permission. So I would try to find that. It's right on YouTube. You'll probably find it right away. Give it a shot, okay. and I'm hoping it works for you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. That's one I haven't had yet. Jason in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Good, thank you for being here and everything. I have a question, a couple things. Well, I'd like to say one quick. I think it was Helen who's looking for probably a micro SD card, and I hope I can list say the name of a store here or whatever, but I've always found very great deals on the memory cards and sticks at Walgreens.
Oh, there we go.
She says she's on a limited budget, and, well, we all are, really.
Yeah.
So, they always have great deals. I had two questions if we have time, and if we don't, we don't. One would be routers. My son has an Xbox One, and then we all have our own devices, and my other son has a PlayStation and stuff, and apparently we're using quite a bit of stuff in our house on a bandwidth. Our router seems to be pretty slow as far as the gaming stuff goes. It takes him over a day to download new games into his Xbox. And I see routers aren't just as simple as going to buy a 802.11 or a wireless G type thing or anything like that anymore. I see them range from $40 to $250 now. In a residence, what kind of router am I looking at, generally speaking?
And it always depends on the residence, the construction, how much area you have. When I look at kind of wireless, at least in my house, I have a couple different wireless antennas because, I have two levels, more area. I would normally go, so you're going to have, just as you mentioned, the 802.11 and then the magical letter after that or letters. I would normally go with N or AC. AC is preferred just because you're going to have more bandwidth in general. It is backward compatible with older devices. You do get a little bit more speed, and you're going to have, depending on the device, multiple antennas, which mean that your devices aren't competing as much for the wireless that they might with a previous iteration of a different router or access point. The kind of follow-up question to that is, well, which one should I get? I don't know if I can answer that question just due to the multitude of options that are out there. Generally, what I do is I'm a big person who likes reviews and ratings. I will look at kind of the general product I want, look at the reviews and ratings from other individuals, and basically kind of vet out my list from that based upon my budget, based upon the amount of reviews and how well it's liked. You can get it for probably under $100. It does depend if you're looking for a router or an access point because they have a little bit of different features. But I would normally go with the AC and go that route because it's going to work with all your devices. It's going to be much faster in general, at least within the network in your home. If it does still take a lot of time for a gaming system to download content, my only other concern would be, is it the internet connection or is it the wireless? Because it's possible you can upgrade the wireless and you're still going to see the same, public network performance that you have right now.
Yep. Yeah, because we do have pretty good speed at home or whatever as far as our cable provider and internet provider goes. That's pretty good there. It is pretty much down to our router, I believe.
Yeah, and I would definitely then, if you do believe you have good internet connection capabilities with your router at home, there's a lot of good stuff out there. I use speedtest.net. You can just test your internet connection. I recently was switching out my router at home to kind of downgrade, and actually kind of did two good downgrades, one because I didn't want to have what I had before, then found out my internet was a little bit slow. I went to did a little bit more research and found, okay, I'm going to spend this money on this new router. It basically tripled my internet connection, so I got a lot more speed, but it always depends on what you're looking for. A lot of the newer cable services out there, they'll give you even over 100 megabit per second. Make sure that your router or your access point that you get does have a gigabit port for your connection to the outside world. That'll make sure that it's going to at least give you the full speed that you might have capable, but also it'll give you some room to grow if there is upgrades in the future.
Excellent.
All right.
All righty. Do we have time for another one?
Sure.
Okay, I went home one day at lunchtime, and I went to refresh my or open up my computer or whatever, and I believe I wiggled the mouse and nothing happened, and I hit a couple keys and nothing happened, and I waited for a little bit, and then I just momentarily pushed the power button to try to wake it up from its hibernation. Nothing was happening. There were no lights on. It wasn't making any sounds or anything like that. So I thought, well, maybe it got shut off. So I pushed the power button down I ended up doing it for like 20 seconds or whatever. It shut off, and I turned it back on, and I got the blue screen. Well, the whole time there was nothing but black, and then I came to the blue screen, and it basically told me to reinstall Windows. So I didn't have my disk at the time or whatever, and I didn't know I didn't know how to do this exactly. So what I did know how to do, though, is I took my hard drive out of that computer, and I hooked it up to another computer, and it's the newer one, so you can't really do it technically as a slave drive, but I did it as an additional drive, and then I couldn't access it. So I got a program, I think it was called RecoverU or something, RecoverU or something.
Okay.
And tried to extract, and I got a bunch of stuff out of there, and I have pictures and videos of my kids and their sports, and I have 2 years of it in there that I'm trying to get. And a lot of stuff I did get recovered, and I stored it to an external hard drive, but some of it on the same hand is saying that, oh, this is when it was originally written, it was written as a C drive, and then now it was hooked up as an F drive. So it couldn't do it because it was, the path had changed.
Right.
Is there a way I can change that path and that stuff, or do you have any recommendations? I mean, I do have the drive put back in because I've been told if I find my Windows disk and install Windows again, that I should be able to recover my stuff that way.
Tell you what, I'm going to have Jesse ponder that. We're going to take a look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. And then we will be back with Jesse LeGrew from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology. You stay with us. Talking about computers today with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Jesse stops by every other month to help us with our computer questions, and he's the technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. All our lines are filled. Number to call, 800-642-1234. And as we broke for news, Jesse, we had Jason from Dodgeville online that was having some C drive issues of some sort. Can you want to explain that again?
Yeah, so it sounded like using the program that was used for the video editing or recording expected the files to be in a certain place. They were looking in the C drive in a certain path. It's on an external drive, which is now the F drive or a slave drive. So how to make that work or how to change it. So there may be a way to change it so it's looking in the proper location. The easiest short-term solution is just to recreate that file path on your C drive, copy the files onto your C drive from the F drive, and then open up the files. It'll at least get you to the capability of opening up and doing something with the content. There might be another way, but it always depends on the software application, and it could be easy or it could be difficult.
But that's the easy way to do it.
That's the easy way in the short term.
All right. There we go, Jason. Gus in Humbert, it's your turn. Hi, Gus.
Well, hello, Larry. Hello, Jesse.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Okay, this is my situation. I'll give you a little background first. I have a place in the woods, and I've got CenturyLink internet, and I like it, and the router that we've got distributes well throughout the house. Now, I also have a hunting cabin up on a hill a distance away from the house. I've purchased Card King long-range wireless adapter, and I get a good signal there. How do I distribute wireless throughout the house so I can have more than one computer running? What do I need to do that?
So you have, right now you do have wireless in your cabin, correct?
That's correct.
And you just want the wireless signal to be accessible from other devices in the cabin?
Right. I've got Windows 7 on a machine, I got Windows 10 on a machine, and I got a PS3. And I'd like them to all be able to go into Wi-Fi.
So, and I'm just taking a look quickly at the adapter. If I am looking at this correctly, so I haven't done too much research behind this specifically. I was actually looking to give a different solution, but you actually might need to install a wireless access point that connects to this Card King that'll allow you to distribute the wireless. Because I think the Card King is really a wireless receiver, correct?
Yes, it's a long-range wireless receiver with an indoor-outdoor antenna and a booster built into it, and it gives me really good signal there. But I've done a little research on it. They said something about just pairing and using that adapter, to bridging, to get access to it, but I'm not sure how that would work.
Yeah, the only other, and it does note that it does have, it'll, you know, give you more wireless coverage. Have you tried to simply, for any of the other devices you have, just simply try to connect to wireless that's available?
No, I have not tried that yet.
Since I haven't used it before, I'm not sure if it does broadcast its own wireless signal. If it does, it's going to just show up as an option.
Okay, so I need to just go ahead and hook up, start a computer up here, see if I can see it.
Yep, I would start there just to make sure that, to see if everything works. They do have probably other adapters in there that might assist. But first, I would try that. And if that doesn't work, so let's say it can't find any wireless signal and the Card King simply receives and doesn't retransmit, you'll probably need a separate device that will allow you to rebroadcast it.
Yeah.
A wireless, it's a router that's wireless capable then?
It would be a router or an access point. Most likely, I'd actually look for something from Card King because it looks like it does have a USB cable that it has kind of coming from it, which means
it's got an additional connection. There's two USBs to it. One goes into the computer, of course. The adapter itself goes into the computer. Then there's an antenna line, a 30-foot antenna line. And but right where the adapter plugs into the adapter, there's another USB on it.
Yeah.
Right, and that's what I see here. My guess is if it isn't transmitting wireless, they probably sell another device that will rebroadcast,
yes,
and you just plug that USB drive into that separate access point, and it'll retransmit it.
And as you say, I'd get it from the same company, probably.
Yeah, they'll have, since it might be, I'm not sure how proprietary it is, but it might be, first, try it. If it turns out you just don't see any wireless signal and it doesn't transmit that way, Card King probably does sell an adapter that you can plug in and retransmit. I'd be really surprised if they didn't.
Yep. There you go. Thanks,
okay.
Gus.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Mark in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Mark.
How are you guys doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I am trying to pass a computer on from my daughter to my wife. It's a Windows 10. I'm having a file access problem. I had read online if you make both of the people admin, you should be able to access all the files, but it doesn't seem to work that way.
Yeah, and for, so it's possible you might both be admins. They kind of have a setting when you set it up. Do you want it to be a private or a non-private account? There's a lot of different Windows settings that makes this possible right away or not. Usually user access control, if that's disabled, doesn't give you a pop-up that lets you kind of get into it with elevated rights. If you do want to get access to the data from your user account or a different user account or even all user accounts, there's a few different ways to go about it. One, I'd enable user access control. That's in the control panel, probably under user accounts as well, and it will probably give you that hit yes to continue capability. If not, you can also right-click on the folder in question, so the user profile folder, go to properties, they'll have a security tab, and you can actually grant yourself rights to that folder, and then you can navigate, copy data, put data in there as well.
When I log in under my wife's login, I can't even see those files that are there under my daughter's login. They're not even visible.
Do you see your daughter's profile folder?
I don't know where I would find that. Maybe.
It would be under, and this was this Windows 7?
10.
Okay, Windows 10. It should be under, go to the C drive, and then go to, you're going to see a folder called Users.
Okay.
And then you should see a list of all the user accounts on that system.
Okay.
And at that point, that's where you can kind of double-click into any one of those folders, and it will either, you know, say access denied, in which you would want to enable user access control or change permissions, or it'll say, hey, you need to have administrative rights, click yes to continue. And it doesn't give you, you're going to see just raw folders and files that you can open up, but that should get you into really any of the user profiles. It doesn't have another nice way of sharing it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Nancy in the Viola area up next. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have an iPhone 7. And when I get a voicemail, if I'm in a rural area, it says transcription not available. And then when I go to, like, into town where I have plenty of access, it's still not available. It basically is never available. Can't listen to it, can't read it, there's nothing lost. Is there any way to disable this?
So and I'm just taking a look at the voicemail transcription. So if the transcription itself doesn't work, you're still unable to just listen to the voicemail?
Correct.
Okay.
It's all gray, nothing happens. You know, when the voicemail comes in, if I'm in a place like in town where I have full bars or whatever they're called these days, then I do get a written transcript, and I can also listen to it. But if it comes in when I'm in this rural area that we have a house, where I have no service, basically,
yeah,
then it says transcription not available, and no matter what I do from then on, it is never available. I can't listen to it. I can't read it. It's gone. And I was wondering if I could just simply disable that feature.
And I believe you can. I'm taking a look here. So there was a few different notes, too, depending on the version of iPhone. Do you know what software version you have on your iPhone right now?
Would that be like iOS 10.2? Would that help?
Correct.
Okay. And the Verizon is the provider?
Okay. And actually, one note was that 10.0.2 actually resolves some of those issues, which doesn't seem to be the case for you. And you can actually disable... Well, actually, I'm taking a look here. I'm not sure. Apparently, you can't, at least from a recent discussion I just found from a few months ago, you can't turn it off. It's a beta right now, or at least it was in October. There was some communication between Verizon and Apple about the issue, and I didn't see any real solution outside of just make sure your phone is up to date. It was supposed to be resolved in the 10.0.2.
Yeah, mine, it is up to date.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's all up to date, and I've looked all over the internet, and I haven't found anything. I found things for Androids, but not for...
Yeah, and so far I can't. I haven't used that myself. Normally, a lot of those services that you have are pay for services, so you could get them disabled from Verizon. This does not appear to be one of those services, at least from what I can see. Although, you know, if it is, I would just ask Verizon just to see if it is something they can turn off on their end.
Oh, okay.
It's a possibility they can't, because I know I have a Sprint, and I think they have a lot of similar services, but I'd have to pay for it. But it's something that I can turn on and off, mainly because it is something I believe I'd have to pay for. And it might be possible with Verizon as well. If not, it might just be waiting for that latest iOS update, and they might have the capability to turn that off in a new release.
That would be good. Do you have time for one more quick?
Sure.
Is there a way to, on a Apple computer, on a laptop, is there a way to, I guess, disable the keyboard but keep the screen up? For instance, when I'm trying to read a recipe as I'm cooking, and I have a kitten who walks across the keyboard, and I wish there was a way, and I know that there is on
some computers, but not on Apple's. I've looked it up online, and it says, you know, there's a way they call it a cleaning mode or something like that. Is there a way, you know, to just make the keyboard not active?
Nancy, I have that same problem. Exact same problem. I'm sitting there with my computer in the kitchen, and Coco or Tiger likes the warm keyboard.
Okay, because I'm thinking I can't be the only person.
No, you're not the only person, believe me. What have you got for us, Jesse?
So there's, in this case, I think it's just really a way to trick. So I have a couple solutions. They may or may not work. One is to actually plug in an external keyboard and mouse. Once you do that, you can actually state, ignore the built-in keyboard and mouse, only respond to my external, which
and
means you kind of... put that in a drawer, and it doesn't just deactivate all the keys, but it does some of them.
Okay.
The only other thing that I was thinking of is actually, you know, finding a way to cover basically the keyboard.
Oh, that's what I mean.
And that's the only other... Right. That's the only other recommendation that I can see. But otherwise, if you do plug in an external device, you can actually have it ignore the trackpad and the built-in keyboard for most keys. And you can try that and see if it works. There's a lot of different... there's probably some cheap options even for a wireless keyboard-mouse combo that... You could actually just plug in this little receiver, disable the function, hide the keyboard in a drawer, and it might fix it.
Okay. But locking the cat in the bathroom works too.
Yeah, it works too.
That can work too. You know those if you buy your cat wet food, likely the boxes are only a couple inches high
exactly
on the sides.
That's what I use.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
What...
Exactly. We are definitely on the same page here.
But then they like to lay on top of that, too.
Yeah, but that's okay. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Oh, boy. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. I got a... for Christmas this year, I... surprisingly received an Echo Dot, and I'm having kind of a lot of fun with Alexa. You know, you can come in and walk in the house and say, Alexa, turn on Wisconsin Public Radio, and Alexa turns it on immediately, and that's kind of fun. And Alexa can tell stories and do things of that nature, and that's kind of fun, too. Nothing that I had on my Christmas list, but you know what? It's kind of fun. Jesse, thank you so much. Boy, you answered a lot of questions today, and I really appreciate it, and look forward to your next visit.
So do I.
Jesse LeGru, technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, our guest, and he'll be back in a couple of months, and we will do this all over again. Tomorrow we'll have a guest who specializes in using DNA to trace your ancestry. So I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.